From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 204 with guest Stephen Rose, recorded Thursday, February 24th, 2011. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. With me, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey, everyone. What's happening, Richard?
Not too much. Up for a little run ass?
Yeah. Yeah, this will be a fun one.
Yeah, this, well, as usual, you know, we've been having a real interesting run of guests lately, but, well, and then we had Steven, so, okay, so the run's over.
Steven Rose is always an interesting person to talk to about what's happening and what's coming.
He's our go-to guy for Windows, so, and it was, and I noticed some stuff up with Windows, so I figured it's probably time to bring him, but let me give him this official introduction here.
Alrighty.
Stephen Rose is the senior community manager for Windows Client IT Pros. Before joining Microsoft, he spent 10 years as an IT consultant, working with Fortune 500 companies, as well as a speaker at the IT and development conferences worldwide. He is an MCSE and MCT, as well as a two-time MVP. Welcome, my friend.
How are you, Richard?
Hey, Stephen.
Greg?
I'm good. So tell me, are there junior community managers to go with your seniorness?
Actually, I'm about to expand my staff, and we'll be bringing in, I don't know if we'll call them junior community managers, but some additional community managers as we start to move towards Windows vNext. We're going to need to expand because for something we've not done in a while, we're going to have IT pros on not one but two operating systems at some decent level. So as you know, a lot of folks skipped Vista, so a lot of our focus has been on XP and 7, but with vNext, it'll certainly add some things to it, and we're very excited to be able to expand and do more of the great social media and IT.
And you're not willing to call it 8, huh?
No, not yet. It's vNext. We don't have an official title internally. We don't have an official title externally. It's we just refer to it as Windows vNext.
Okay. And this has been the most closely held Windows ever. Really not a lot leaked out. I mean, I get a little tidbit from Mary Jo Foley and so forth every so often, but very little known about what's coming in the new one.
It's going to be a very exciting time. We are keeping this one very close just because, you know, competition and things change very, very quickly. Hmm. And we want to make sure we're really able to do what's best for folks and really create a great OS. We did release the information about the system on the chip architecture at CES.
Right. And also the ARM implementation.
Absolutely, which I think is exciting because what it says is that we're going to be able to put Windows vNext on a wide variety of devices to meet the needs both of consumers and of IT pros. And I think, you know, when we all first started in this business, it was only desktop, then it became desktop and some laptop. Now it's mostly laptop. And now we're moving into new form factors like Slate, things along that line. So we really want to make sure that we can deliver not a OS, you know, phone OS on steroids, but really provide a great experience on a wide variety of devices and allow people to use the software that they're used to using. That if you buy a copy of Office for your laptop, that it'll work on your Slate device and other devices, and that experience will carry across. So I think it's some interesting direction.
So in that respect, would you, and again, you can only talk about so much, I'm sure, but we can always try. So would you call this, vNext evolution or revolution?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think we're responding to what IT pros want in the marketplace. We have a lot of people that are bringing in, consumer devices into the workplace.
Right.
And the IT pros turn around and say, hey, this is great. My boss just bought 2,500 XYZ devices. I need to lock them down. I'm concerned because I don't want people putting sensitive company data on these. Sure. You know, I can't manage them. I can't do this. And I think our goal, you know, right now is we've built out some content for on Springboard on how to get Windows via VDI to work on some of these third-party devices to create that secure environment. People want when they open up an email that has restricted permissions to be able to open it. a Word document that requires a password to open it or to lock down these. So I think that's really our first step.
You know, Stephen, you can say iPad. You're allowed.
We can. Well, it's not just iPads. It's iPads. It's Android. It really is a wide variety of operating systems that people are starting to walk in with, and it's even home PCs. It's even things like Google PCs that we're starting to see. It's people bringing in, you know, the new Motorola Zoom tablet. So it's such a wide variety. You know, we just sort of lump them together into third-party devices, but it's making sure that it can be managed.
Well, there's a strong need in the enterprise to be able to manage the wide and diverse, and to date, relatively unmanageable in terms of doing it in one place in one way, system and set, you know, of devices, operating systems, tools, and what have you. Is that something that Microsoft is pushing toward? Is that a key focus area for Microsoft?
I don't think it's a key focus area, but it's an important area of focus. I mean, we are going to be building out features into our product sets that you are going to see that are going to enable you to better manage these. I mean, I have an Asus Slate that I got. It's a tablet PC that's actually running a Pentium processor. So it's very fast. I'm running a full version of Windows, full graphics. You know, I can do web calls, the whole thing. And I love it. And people are going, this is great, but I don't have 3,000 of those. So I think our goal is to make it manageable, to get Windows on it, to allow you to have levels of security on it until we really have a great product that people go, awesome. The form factor, the product, the battery life, everything I'm looking for is within this. And until we do that, I think our role of responsibility is to help IT pros manage this as best as possible side by side. But again, you are bringing a non-Microsoft device into a Microsoft environment, so we're limited in how much we can do, but we are definitely stepping up on this.
I look at stuff like NAP as absolutely a key resource here, that being able to have someone come into the workplace with an iPad and connect to the wireless in a limited fashion, that it is controlled. It's not you're either on or you're off, but that they recognize this is not a device that is nappable. I'll give it internet access, but it's on literally a separate subnet from my file servers.
But the problem we run into is then folks just install Dropbox, and they put that on that. They have it on their laptop. They take a lot of secure documents. You know, here's my sales pipeline. Dump it into Dropbox. Get an Office lookalike product off of, you know, whether it's the iTunes store or the Android store, et cetera. And then they have this data on their PC. We're doing something simple, like pushing out a group policy that says all documents in sales and marketing must be password protected.
Right.
You can't open up a password protected document unless you're running Office. So
where are the boundaries going forward then? Are the boundaries the classic boundaries, like you know, this system versus that system, or this device versus that device? Or is it time to redraw the boundaries around the data in the context of the data itself, and to control where information can actually move as opposed to what devices are on a network that might have access to information? Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
I think it's a great question. I think it really depends on the company and how experienced and diverse they are. If you have a company that's still running Server 2000 and Windows XP, you're going to be limited to how much you can do within that. If you're using, you know, cloud storage, that's going to change that. So I really think it depends on each company. And what we can do is, you know, while we are looking to bring out great devices that will work standard across the enterprise, is to create a wide variety of different solutions that IT pros can implement to help to lock these down rather than just say no. Because I think a lot of these devices are great. I think they help people to be more productive in more places. And that's one of the great things that we want to do, is not cripple people or penalize them because they're bringing a consumer device into the workplace, but to try to help support that. But there still is that, hey, we're Microsoft, and our role is to do and manage Microsoft-type software and devices, and we'll do the best that we can with that and give the IT pro a lot of options. So I think we're definitely stepping up and being the good corporate citizen and really trying to help, you know, people to do that as best as we can.
Tell you my position on tablets, and I'm coming at this from knowing absolutely nothing about what the Windows team is doing, is that blowing Windows Phone 7 up onto a tablet doesn't seem like a good idea. I think we're getting so much hardware performance these days. We've got so much guts coming out of the ARM chipsets and so forth that we can take full bore Windows and put it down onto a tablet and it'll work. However, the UI, the operating system itself and its default UI are not the right UI for a tablet. I think the opportunity here is to create a replacement UI that is designed for tablet to make developers jump through the hoops of making good touch tablet software, but always having on the back end the strength of Windows 7 so that if you want to run a non-tablet app, you have that option, but you have to clearly make that happen.
I agree 100%. I think, Irving, the same conversation that we had at Microsoft a while back, and it's, you know, do we just throw a phone OS on these devices? And I think, no, I think you're crippling the experience in the device.
Right.
Windows is a great experience. And, you know, somebody was telling me, I was at an airport a few weeks ago, and I was sitting next to a guy who was definitely an Apple fanboy. He had his Mac laptop, and he had his iPad, and he had his iTunes. And we were chatting, and I'm like, I see you're using this Office type app, and I'm like, are you able to just buy it once and run it on all three of these devices, or do you have to purchase a different version with different functionality within it three times over? And he says, I have to buy it three times. And I went, wow, you know, I really want to see it where when you buy Office, you install it on your laptop, you install it on your tablet, that there's a connector for it via your phone. And once you buy that once, you've bought it for all of those devices.
Right.
It works the same. It becomes a different experience. And I think that's the problem. And Windows is we've done great things with Windows 7, and to cripple it by reducing functionality, I think we're doing a disservice. So I think you've said exactly it. The conversation that we have, which is, how do we make vNext be a great experience for all devices, working very closely with our OEM partners to create a great experience that IT pros will love because they'll be able to manage it appropriately, and end users will love it because of the functionality and the features that are going to be within it. So I think we have some very, very exciting things that we're working on. I think consumers are going to be very happy. I think, like with Win 7 Phone, where we really came out with a strong product and gave people a lot of choices in the workplace, I think we're looking to do very much the same thing with vNext and our OEM partners that we're going to be working with.
So where should we go next? Do you want to talk a little IE, or you've got some product announcements you want to dig into?
We have a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, obviously, our the big news back in February was the release, first of all, of the IE9 release candidate.
Yes.
Which I really like. I had some issues with the beta. I think the beta was great in the fact that it really tried to do a lot of new things, but we got back some really great telemetry. We fixed a lot of those bugs, and I think we have a product now with the release of RTM coming up very, very shortly that is strong, that really does well, that's built a little bit more for touch, that offers some great features and functionality for end users, and it's really our step towards really solidifying HTML5 as a very, very strong platform to start building on. And a good fast browser that allows you to use GPU enhancement as well as software enhancement depending on your system. So if you're running Windows Vista, if you're running Windows 7, you now have a browser that's fast with some good functionality. The tearaway tab is something that people have been asking us for a long time. The simplified UI, the smart screen filter, some really good security features for the way that people work. Have you guys played with it?
Yeah, it's running on my main workstations now. I'm with you. The beta was fun to play with, but the RC, it's like, okay, this is usable.
Yeah.
Although I find it interesting that I clearly see in IE9 that I am not the target market. That features that I used heavily in IE8, like bookmarks, have sort of moved down in priority in IE9. They're there, but they're off to the right, and they don't behave quite the same. You know, they feel a little ignored because, as I understand it, the regular mortal doesn't use them.
Yeah, I think there tends to be a lot of sites to go to. I think with pinning and with sites like CNN and Facebook and Hotmail, where now when you pin a site, you know, you go up to it, you right-click it, and you have this wide variety of choices that you can use, whether it's Bing or CNN, things like that.
Right.
So I think what we're seeing is now that people have these monstrous monitors, we're going into 22. I've seen people with 32-inch monitors. I can't tell if they're watching TV or working.
Right.
The fact that you can have 10, 15 pin sites with these sub-sites within it, these jump lists is a lot faster for a lot of folks.
Yeah.
And I think that we're really kind of going with the enthusiast. More features than consumers are using. For IT pros, there's still the way to set that up and do that, to build that out. And I think one of the cool features in 9 and something I've been playing with is that F12 quirks mode where you can say render in 7, make it look like 8, yeah. Render it in 9. And from a development standpoint, it gives you some great usability and functionality as you start to see how will this site work and look with previous versions of this. And a great tool to help troubleshoot if things are not working correctly.
My role at Strange Loop Networks, we really enjoy IE9 from a debugging perspective. Of course, we're working on performance tuning of websites all the time. Unfortunately, IE9 is not going to play a big factor until there's a lot of people using it that we actually tweak and tune specifically for it. But it's a nicer UI for testing with, no doubt about yeah. that.
I think it'll make a big difference in that because we had so many people. We had, 22 million that downloaded the beta and a lot of people with the release candidate. So I'm glad to see that people are trying it, and hopefully they'll go, hey, this is a good browser that is doing good things for me.
What do IT professionals need to be thinking about or need to know about Internet Explorer 9 when it comes to just doing their thinking ahead about rolling this out and the impact that it might have, decisions they might want to make, best practices and stuff like that?
I think the great thing is that if they've done their work on 8, if you've already sat down and taken a look at your websites and remediated those and the key ones, to get them to work on 8, you're going to be fine moving into 9. It's going to be very little work. For those people that are still on Windows XP and using IE6 that are now going to move to Windows 7, my advice is go to 7 and go to IE8. We have a lot of documentation. We have, our app compat list. We have the app compat toolkit. We have a lot of great tools out around that. And pilot 9, give it to some folks, test it, and use it. I think that's really the best way to go because of the amount of information, because of the amount of people that have moved and updated their stuff to 8. And then when you're ready to go to 9, it's going to be there and require very little work. I think what's interesting was I was having a long chat with Chris Jackson, the app compat guy on this. And he was telling me about customers that he's gone into where they go, yeah, we have, 6,000 sites that don't work in 8. He goes, how many of these 6,000 sites do you use on a regular basis? They go, well, only about 60 of them. So he says, so why are you going to pay all this money for a site that you use once a year? Does that make sense?
Right.
No. Why not just, virtualize that or have some additional options? And he says, a lot of them, it's a simple code thing where it says, if browser is equal to IE6 or below, and he says in many cases, it's doing nothing more than putting in a browser is greater than IE6, opening that up, and all of a sudden, tons of websites start to render. He says, I've had companies where we've expected a week, and we've been done in a few hours by just doing some very, very simple code changes and really sitting down and saying, what makes sense to update and turn? And I think that's really, I think it's looking at it logically, taking your time, and I tell folks, when moving from XP to Windows 7, it's like moving, and there are two different types of people. There's the people who take everything as is and move it into a new space, or there's the folks who go through everything and say, do I still need this, and does this really fit my lifestyle? And I think in doing a migration from the previous OS to a newer OS, it's great to sit down and say, does this still make sense? Do we need 3 versions of this? If this is the latest version, we've used this version for 7 years. It's time we spend a little money and go to the latest supported version of this application.
I also wonder if we're not really going to see serious IE9 adoption until Windows 8 comes with it, or Windows V next. That there's a non-trivial amount of browser adoption based on what OS it ships with.
Absolutely. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see the things that we do as we go with this browser and future browsers. As we look at Windows V next and things along that line, I agree. But right now, majority of people are moving to 7 and moving to 8, and they're having a good experience with it, but they skipped Vista. So that work in getting from XP to 7, that work from getting from IE6 to IE8 is going to happen. You saved money, you saved a lot of time. It's just going to require people sitting down and doing some of the work. And, we're trying to build as many resources as possible. What we're finding now is the wave one, very savvy wave of IT pros that rolled out Windows 7 in its first year. We've now moved to this wave two. A lot of these IT pros who know how to maintain a network. They were brought in from help desk or brought up, and they know, I push that button to image a system, I copy the profile here, I do this to do backups, and they know how to maintain it, but they've never rolled out and deployed an operating system. They've never done application compatibility. So it's very new to them, and it's requiring a lot more time and a lot more energy, and of course, the last thing any IT pro wants to do is go to the boss and say, hey, I've never done this, and I don't know how in this market, in this climate. So it's becoming a very interesting situation with IT pros and how they are now viewing, deploying, and looking at moving to a new OS. And as we get closer to 2014, when XP comes into the end of life, this is going to become more and more of an issue. So I think a lot of people are waiting for vNext to see if it, you know, does what 7 doesn't. But, you know, I think very comfortably we can say that whole, you know, if it, like we said, if it works in Vista, it works in 7. If it works in IE8, it works in IE9. And I think a lot of that is going to come through with Windows vNext, and you're not going to find the silver bullet that's going to solve your issues. You're still going to have to sit down and do that work.
And we did a show with Chris Jackson a while back. I think it was 176, specifically about IE6 app compat, because, you know, Chris is all about application compatibility, whether it's traditional apps, MFC and .NET apps, or web apps. And it really some interesting points he made about how you migrate IE6 apps successfully. It's interesting how much traction IE6 had. The apps that got built on IE6 just don't move.
Yeah, no, not at all. And Chris does great stuff on this. I mean, he has his, you know, if you go to technet.com/app compat, he has that whole zone where he's put up tons of videos and white papers and stuff on this, and he's done a great job on it. So
Windows 7 has been out for a little while now. It's seen certainly some pretty substantial adoption compared to the previous version of Windows that was released. And so I imagine, you know, Microsoft has seen...
It's okay. We can say Vista. We can say people didn't do Vista, and it's fine. We can say that.
Well, I know that you've mentioned it a couple times. But so, you know, I mean, people have experienced for themselves, you know, usability improvements and a lot of general obvious, you experience them in your daily routine improvements. What about things like security and manageability and some of the things that Microsoft may have seen in the background? I'm curious what information you might have in that regard. And then also, you know, we can talk about v.next, but we still have Windows 7. That's going to be around for a while. So also, what's coming up for Windows 7 in the near future?
Well, absolutely. I mean, we released SP1, which, you know, had some great new features for server, but no new functionality for Windows 7. It was really a roll-up of security patches and drivers and things like that. I think security is always at the forefront of the stuff that we do. I mean, one of the great things that we love to tell people is one of the best reasons to move to IE8 and IE9 is there are 1,400 security features and policies that you can set in place to lock down that browser. And that's something you cannot do with Firefox or with Google Chrome or with Safari. There isn't 1,400 security features that you can use to standardize and lock down. I think as an IT pro, and Greg and Richard, I know in all your years of experience, that one of the best things that we strive to do as IT pros is standardize our environment internally, because it makes it easier to troubleshoot, it makes it easier to answer questions, and when people's start menus are the same and what's on their desktop is the same and the group policies are minimal to only 3 or 4 specific groups within the company, it makes it very easy to know where you stand from a security standpoint. And I think with Windows 7 and with IE, this has been the key thing, is to release better templates, better security policies for those people who know nothing about how to lock down the network. Is we have templates, low, medium, high level templates that can be installed to create a good standard base. There is a ton of features internally that we can secure. Windows 7 as an OS is far more secure, from simple things like, you know, anti-phishing, into just the hardening of the OS. And although we have a lot of security patches that come out, I think what's interesting is when somebody says, you know, sees record number of security patches from Microsoft this month, and we released 22 a few months ago, that these are not security patches that came up because somebody hacked Windows 7 or somebody hacked IE6 or IE7 or IE8 or Windows XP. These are ones where we said, hey, these are vulnerabilities that we're seeing that someone could potentially exploit. So we're going to push those out. And it always makes me a little crazy when people say, oh, it's really bad. I'm like, many of these are proactive. They're not reactive. People immediately assume that these are, we're plugging holes instead of really saying, hey, we're actually shimming this wall to make it stronger and to do what it needs to do. And I think that's the key perspective as we look at this. But Windows 7 is our most secure operating system that we've ever built. IE 8 and 9 are the most secure browsers we've ever built. But when an IT pro takes the time to really learn how to secure these and kind of goes through it, there's some really amazing things that you can do. And you can lock this down into an almost unusable OS and browser if you choose and offer some very, very limited functionality, or open it up pretty wide but add security where you feel as a company you need it to help protect the end user first and the data as well.
I get the impression that if you've got Windows Update turned on for Windows 7, then SP1 really doesn't do much for you, that the SP1 is really all about 2008 R2.
It very much is. I mean, yes, we have updated some drivers and added some new drivers to make sure that when you buy new products, that Windows immediately finds them and does it. And that was one of the things, you know, going back to our Slate conversation, that's a great thing. And people love the fact that, hey, if I plug in any keyboard, any mouse, anything into one of our Windows 7 Slate devices, hey, it's going to find it and it's going to work. And the service pack ensures that that's going to keep happening, that if not everybody is kept up, not only on the mandatory ones, but some of the really good optional ones, that those are all in there. So it'll bring them up to date. It'll give them the level of security that they're looking for and provide some additional functionality by doing some bug fixes. I know it does a little bit around battery life and things like that, but really minor. But one of the key things is just the addition of these new and updated drivers to make sure that experience is good. And, you know, it didn't take me very long to download it and install it as opposed to like the Vista service packs, which were considerably longer and would take almost an hour and a half to install. I had the thing done in about 40 minutes from start to finish, and it worked very well for me. And although you look at it and don't see any major difference, it's those small little things day to day that are just going to work, which is what that experience should be. It should be a transparent experience going, hey, I bought a new printer, I plugged it in, and there it was in device stage, and I didn't have to install any software or do anything. And that's that great transparent experience.
All right, Stephen, what's next? Tell us some news.
Windows Intune we made the announcement at MMS, and we're very, very excited about Windows Intune. I think it's a great product for a lot of small to mid-sized businesses, although we have a lot of enterprises that are interested. Windows Intune is a management console. It brings in features like System Center Online. It brings in feature like Forefront, where you can install a small client on all PCs that are running Windows Pro, that are running Windows Enterprise, and you can manage them. You can see, are they up to date on patches? Are they secure? What is the status of these machines? What applications? What's being installed on them? And what's great is if you're, let's say, a consultant, you could have one dashboard for five or six different companies and be able to see that all through one view. The other nice feature is this is a per-seat license. So you're only paying for the licenses and for the machines that you're running. So it's not, hey, I got to go out and buy 50 Microsoft licenses, but I only have X amount of people.
Right.
And probably one of the best features is for an additional U.S. dollar in the United States and in some of the other countries, you move from the Pro SKU to a full version of Enterprise with MDOT because you get the software assurance volume licensing. So now you have access for a dollar per seat to MedV, AppV, DEM, DART, AIS, AGPM, MBAM, our new MBAM release, our new Microsoft Locker management tool, as part of that. So I think it's a great affordable way for companies to get the full value of Windows, to be able to get a great remote or on-site management experience for all of these PCs, and get the value of these top-level SKUs and feature sets.
Are we talking about a System Center Lite here?
It is System Center Online, but it has more than System Center because the inclusion of things like Forefront, the ability to take a look at, you know, what is physically installed, what are the patches, it really kind of goes beyond that. But unlike System Center, these machines only need to have internet access. They don't need to be on a controlled domain.
Right.
So I can have a bunch of machines that are part of work groups, some that are part of domains. They're spread out across multiple companies in different form factors, but I'm managing them all through one console in one location.
So this is the central management is provided as a service, or this is something that I install?
What it is, it's a web page that you go to, and there's a small client that is installed on each PC that will be able to allow you to manage that and be able to, you can also log in and troubleshoot and help and take control of the PC as well. But I think what's exciting about it is this is a cloud-based service, and it really allows us to continue to build upon this and add levels of features and functionality, where the great thing is you may log in on Thursday and all of a sudden, hey, there's a brand new feature here, and it's right there and it's ready to go. So there isn't, I've got to download software updates, I have to do all this stuff. It's, you log in and it's there. We've had a lot of people that said, when will I be able to do SQL BI analytics and things like that? And these are all features that we're looking at and that we're going to really take this product and make it wide and really do some great things over the next year or two. But from a single per seat, able to pay a monthly license type role on this, I think it's a great step and something that a lot of small to mid-sized businesses have asked for a long time, that we're using maybe small business server and said, look, we want to move to a larger enterprise or we want to stay here. We don't even have a server. You know, that we really can work with all of these different types of company form factors.
So it strikes me that there's two pieces to this. One is the inventorying of what you've got and what configuration state it's in. And the other part is surfacing all of the things you could be running.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of folks really struggle with the product list to say, which of these pieces should I be running? And, you know, what am I capable of using? I think Forefront sounds like an interesting idea, but answering the question, do I need a domain or, you know, what security policies do I need to run? Having a tool that brings that together shows me clearly, oh, you can run Forefront and here's where it would fit.
Yeah, that, exactly. You know, so, you're getting that great value of Windows 7. You're getting a simplified PC management console to be able to do this. And again, no matter how they're located and where they're put together, it doesn't matter. I just want to manage my PC. I don't care how it's set up and how it's done. So, you know, we can do that from anywhere. We can provide remote assistance, centrally manage the update. We're protecting the PC from malware threats. You know, we're getting that Windows 7 Enterprise or Pro experience. We're able to manage all the updates through the web-based console. We're able to take a look at potential problems that could cause issues that, hey, this one has not been updated. This doesn't have a key secure patch. Things along that line. And we're managing all of that from a single view and able to create reports that make sense and doing this all through the cloud, which just provides great uptime for the folks that are using this. So it removes a lot of those blockers on, I would use this, but, and as our first rollout of this, I think we've done some good things, but I think we have some great potential in this product. And I think we're going to see very exciting things from it as we move into Intune V2 and V3 as the future goes on. And it's a product that we're going to be looking to update on a very regular basis and add new features and functionality to.
And this is a per machine, per month charge out.
Absolutely. So you can do it per, and you can change that at any month. So you can say, you know what? We're moving into Christmas. We're going to add 40 more machines. Okay, great. At $10 a machine, we'll add 40 more machines. They're in all these remote locations. They're being managed and all that. And you can turn around in January and say, hey, those 40 machines are offline. Okay, great. You don't have to pay for them anymore until that time comes. So for companies where the amount of workers that you have working can change dramatically from month to month and how that works, this becomes a great opportunity for companies that are looking to grow and expand that don't want to get locked into a big contract. You know, saying, well, we're only at 20 people now, but we know within the year we're going to be at 100, you know, rather than buy 100 licenses and not use them all immediately off the bat, you can upgrade this and move this as you so see fit. And then again, that value of software assurance and volume licensing and giving you the MDOP really adds a nice added feature. And for only a dollar more per seat, it really becomes a no-brainer for a lot of folks.
And for folks who don't know what MDOP is?
MDOP, thank you. It's the Microsoft Desktop Optimization Pack. It is made up of our two virtualization technologies, MedV and AFI. MedV, right. Our desktop virtualization solution, and AFI, our application virtualization solution. And then our individual tools, Dart, which is the old system recovery, Mark Rusinovich tools that we've now moved in, which allows you to, you know, unlock a laptop where somebody doesn't know the password to be able to get into one that won't boot up. It has a lot of great diagnostic and recovery tools, which is what DART stands for. We have our AGPM, which is our advanced group policy management tool. We have our AIS, which is our asset inventory service tool that will go through and literally create a full asset list of what is on all the PCs within your environment. And now MBAM, our Microsoft BitLock management, which allows you to set up remote management of BitLocker and centrally manage all of your machines that are BitLocked, passwords, the accounts, et cetera. And I have a really good blog post up on my blog on Windows Team Blog in the Springboard area on MBAM and what it does and how to break that down, as that is one of our newest products. It's currently in beta, but we're looking forward to release sometime, I believe, in early to mid-April. I believe that'll come out of beta RC and go into full function.
Well, Stephen, I think we're about out of time.
Awesome. It always flies when I chat with you guys.
Always flies, and we get a real good sense of the state of being for these different things. When are we going to be able to know more about Windows vNext? Because I know it's on everyone's mind.
In the near future, we're still discussing, you know, timelines on when we're going to see a public beta for folks.
Right.
We're moving at a good rate, and we're very much on track with that 3 years from when you saw the Windows 7 beta. We should be seeing the Windows vNext beta, so we're very much on track with that.
Good.
So, and we're coming up on year two, full release, and we're now almost at 3 years. We'll be at 3 years from the beta late this fall, early next year. So somewhere in that time frame, I think, end users will have some fun stuff to play with.
Great, and you'll be on the show to tell us all about it.
I absolutely will. I promise.
Stephen Rose, thanks very much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Stephen.
Always a pleasure, Richard. Greg, thank you very much.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.